Okay, everybody, I want to tell you before the episode starts about Anchor, the podcast app that Nick and I use to record this. And so when we first came up with the idea of starting a audio-only show, we had so many questions. We were like, how do we record this episode? Where do we get background music? How do I need to edit it? How do I get it on iTunes and Spotify and everywhere else? Do we need to find advertising? Do people care about advertising? And every answer led to Anchor. And so Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, distributing, and monetizing your podcast. And it's 100% free and it's super easy to use. And they just rolled out the sponsored feature. And so our first sponsor of the show is Anchor, the podcast we're using. And so if you're interested in using Anchor, thank you for listening to our show. If you want to make your own show, go to anchor.fm/start to join me in the diverse community of podcasters already using this app. And you can start your own show. Send it to me and I'll definitely give it a listen. Thank you so much for listening to our show and listening to this ad brought to you by Anchor. Look at us. We're growing, you guys. Thank you so much for putting up with me this last minute and a half. I appreciate you. Please enjoy the intro and then enjoy the show. It's episode 15 here at the Catching Up Podcast with Connor and Nick. And we're starting off today's show talking about the death of net neutrality and what that means moving forward. Bird scooter craze is going crazy in California. They're now valued at $2 billion. WTF. There's going to be carnage. Here, we're going to talk about what we think about it. The next topic comes from a contributor on founderslive.com, Kevin Lewis, but he wants to know some tips and tricks for the best ways to recruit high quality talent when you're only a small growing startup. Lastly, we end off the show talking about my favorite sporting event, the World Cup. It's a little bit of a non-tech topic, but we're excited to talk about some sports and things that are happening in our lives. I hope you enjoy the show of episode 15 of the Catching Up Podcast with Connor and Nick. Please enjoy the show, write us a review, send us a tweet, comment on Founders Live. We'd love to hear from you and enjoy your day. Hey.
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I might have cut out there during that intro. Hello, I was switching my headphones. I apologize. But like always, I like to start off the show with just a recap. How did your week go?
The week went pretty well. Yeah, just pushing through a number of things. Yeah, I just feel like, it was in general a positive week. And I actually started, just to note, this was the first week for the course that I'm putting on. It's called Founders Five, and it's basically a 5-week course on really five things that I believe are fundamental to essentially mastering as you get off the ground as an entrepreneur. So
Okay.
it's week one. It's pretty cool.
And can you provide us any more context on these five things, or can you give us like a little teaser or sales pitch for it?
Well, the five things are first and foremost your essentially the tenacity mentality, and really about how how you prepare and mentally approach being an entrepreneur, because it's absolutely, it's nothing like anything else that you've done.
Yeah.
Secondly, next, so the next week we're working on basically connecting and communicating with people. So as a founder, you really need to understand how to expand your network and communicate with other founders and investors and, just the general public. Third is problem solution thinking. When you start something, you can't just say, "Hey, wouldn't it be cool if," and try to force a solution on no problem. You got to start with the problem first and then find a solution that people will pay for. Fourth is, basically prototyping and hacking your first product and figuring out a way to get a very quick, cheap MVP, minimum product out to the market so you can get feedback and iterate. And then lastly, it's about, scaling and growth. So, once you have all that we've worked on, and then a small, at least an early product, how do you start scaling and growing your company, your team, your entire vision to create a very great business. So that's a five, it's actually a great 5 week kind of flow, that this is the first time I put it on. So I'm going to see how it's, how it works. And then most likely I'll cycle through, you know, 3 or 4 a year, something like that.
Awesome. And, so is it in person or online course?
It's online. It's online. So we have a weekly call, and then, basically there's just like, you know, homework and content, and I'm, you know how much content I have the years. So I'm really pulling from a lot of the stuff I've created over the last like 5 years.
That's awesome. So, how long have you been working on this project for?
You know, actually I threw it together in the last like, you know, month and a half. And, I've been thinking about doing it for a long time. So a lot of the ideas and thoughts were there. It's just, you know, actually there's some tech, you know, there's some functionality and feature sets in Founders Live that allows for the course to be fully facilitated within Founders Live. So this is almost like it's a test and an experiment for how that feature set works. It's also a test and experiment to see how the content flows and how it's put together. And, you know, so I'm just experimenting just like we all should.
That's fantastic. And I mean, you have the experience and you definitely have the content how many years you've been working within startups here in Seattle. So that makes total sense. Well, that is super cool. Congratulations on launching that. Anyone that's out there listening, check that out on founderslive.com. But let's jump into some of the first topics that we have today. Let's start off with the first one. And so net neutrality was officially dead, I believe, on June 1st, or was it June 6th?
Looks like it's as of the 11th.
Or as of the 11th. It is now officially dead, which doesn't mean it's actually officially dead. But when the new chairman of the SEC, I believe Ajit Pai, he got the approving vote for the Restoring Internet Freedom Order, which just is ridiculous name. So that passed back in December. And so now there are really no protections on the internet kind of being this wild west open platform where everyone's competing, right? So Founders Live has the same access as Facebook and Twitter and all these other monsters. So you guys can actually compete as far as access goes. There has been a little bit of pushback. I know on this, just about the same day, the state of Washington passed a law that is pretty much restoring net neutrality. Oregon is very close to doing that. And there's like another 20 states that are in the process of trying to approve some rules. The Senate has actually already passed repealing this ruling. And now it's got to get through Congress. But it looks like they still need like 50 more Congress people to switch. And then they also need the president to sign it. And it sounds like the president, he's gonna need some convincing to do. And so, Nick, I kind of want you to take the lead. Like, now that it's here, right? Because I know we've talked about this in previous weeks in the show, but now that it's actually like, hey, this is real, you know, what are your feelings about it?
I think it's scary. I think it's a situation that I think it's a points to a very scary future of the internet. You just mentioned, like, look, you know, companies like Founders Live and, you know, smaller startups are going to have a harder time getting equal footing with battling the larger brands. And, you know, especially, you know, Founders Live is in the, you would call it the media business, or at least in one way, shape or form. And it definitely really bothers me that there's now, like, you know, essentially, you know, I think that this sums it up, which is content discrimination. Legal protections against content discrimination on the internet are gone. That's a scary world for me to be in as a consumer, but even more scary as a business owner. And in the video, he says, like, you know, internet's gonna be a lot more like cable now. And, you know, cable, you have quite a bit of, you know, limited choices depending on the network. And there's all this crap that's out there versus the internet is just such a free access, you know, widespread world that we're used to living in. And I'm a little concerned, and I hope that I hope that over time, I hope that this is not the solid set in stone decision for the future of the internet. I hope that there's a lot longer battle that in the end, legally, it can come back to, in my opinion, the restoring internet freedom should actually be the other way around. But
yes.
It's kind of crazy. But yeah, I don't know what any thoughts on that. I'm sure that you probably have similar ones, but any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm scared as well. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up is I just really feel like this needs so much attention and it's not really getting the attention that it deserves. And I mean, we live in a little bubble here in the Northwest. That's more than clear. But I don't see anyone really defending the government on this one and repealing net neutrality. It was really weird that so many people are outspoken about this is the wrong thing to do, but you know, this still got passed. And I just find it really fishy, and I don't want to get too much into politics, but like this is 100% led by these big conglomerates.
Oh, dude, I was just going to say that. When you look at this page in the video, right before you click it, you know, T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T, Comcast, they're all sitting in the background, and you know, you don't. Of course, there's money flowing, and more importantly, so the whole AT&T, Time Warner, that all just was accepted, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And that there's a lot there. This is all about content. This is all about, you know, throttling certain speeds. And really it's frustrating to me. And I don't know, you know, I think one of the biggest answers to your question is, honestly, it's not an easy thing to understand. And so literally 80-90% of our general public have no clue what the whole actual issue of net neutrality is. It's hard for me to keep it all straight, but all I can say is legal protections against content discrimination, if that's going away, we're screwed. And yeah,
that's a good like, I think, word too.
Yeah, and I think most people don't even understand what exactly is happening. That's why there's not a huge outrage.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that word discrimination, hopefully it keeps getting used, because it's just a powerful word, especially right now in today's society, with all the controversy that's going on. But if this is happening and this goes away, all of the understanding of the current state of discrimination in our country, which is still a big problem, it's all boiling up, and there's so much attention coming to it, in my opinion, for the right reasons. But the reason this is all showing up is because the internet is so open and people can now share their stories. They can share their videos and their experiences, and those things can go viral very easily. And if this changes, right, not everyone's going to be able to get their voices heard. I mean, AT&T and Verizon and Comcast are going to control what gets out there and what doesn't. And so I'm really hoping that Google and Facebook and Microsoft and Amazon, these companies, that they're only here because of net neutrality and the opportunities the internet provides. And I think their future, it might be dependent on that too, because mergers and acquisitions and innovation between companies using the internet is so important that I hope those companies stay on the side of net neutrality and they kind of battle back against T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T, and Comcast, and we figure this all out and it all works out the best for all of us, because you and me are in let's just say some deep shit if that doesn't go down.
Yeah, totally. So the next man, kind of speaking of crazy, you know, we've mentioned this back a little while, but dude, this scooter craze is insane, and it's only getting crazier literally every week. And let me just lay out what I think really, you know, cracked it for me was so, you know, there's a number of, you know, there's the like, you know, the bike sharing companies, but now all these scooters, and some of them are from bike sharing companies as well. But, you know, the main ones, and I'll just point out one of them, which is Bird. You know, Bird has come on the scene, and, you know, they've raised – dude, Bird is, like, less than 2 years old, maybe a year old, And they've raised, I'm not sure how much money at this point, but 100, like probably 300-400 million. They raised, it was like 150, 200 million a couple months ago. They closed it. They're already announcing to raise another couple hundred million at a doubled valuation at 2 billion. So we're talking about a company, a startup that has gone from zero to, quote, $2 billion valuation in less than a year. And there's all these regulations and crap. It's a city to city regulations on, you know, what can be out there and, you know, how, you know, they're littered across the street. It's just so crazy. And then lastly, you know, the article that I pushed on here was actually like personal injury lawyers are literally salivating, and they're the ones that are like, yeah, put them all out there because they know that they're getting some business. So, man, my official statement is I'm calling a shit ton of bullshit on this. I think it's absolutely sickening as a founder that is looking to capitalize and run a company. And you see that this thing called Bird is raising hundreds of millions of dollars. They're getting money thrown at them. It's a freaking scooter, and they're valued out what, a billion and a half to 2 billion. It really kind of pisses me off.
Yeah.
And it feels like, I'm not only saying the scooter craze is a bubble, but it's just the absolute filthy bullshit wealth that's happening in the bubble of Silicon Valley. So that's my getting off my pedestal. But what do you think, man?
Well, first off, and I remember when we brought this up, because I had a fantastic time riding on these Bird scooters. I really did enjoy the opportunity it provided when I was visiting in L.A. I was on the Venice Boardwalk, and the friends I was with were like, hey, there's these Bird scooters, and we have the boardwalk. Like, we should rent them and go ride them. They gave us, like, it was, like, 15 minutes for free to ride them. So we rode them for, like, half an hour, and it cost us $4 or whatever it was. And I had a fantastic time. It was a great time. And then I saw them all over in Santa Monica and some other places there in L.A. But I am also in your boat that a $2 billion valuation is just ridiculous, because these scooters are not Uber. They aren't going to be used in every single city. In Seattle, they pretty much put a stop. I don't think they're going to be coming here in Seattle, at least with Live Bike. They tried to launch them, but the city said no. I know Austin is having some issues because they just launched them in Austin really without asking. But in all these rainy, wet, snowy cities, these scooters, just no way they can work. But right, they do have the electric bikes, so maybe there's an argument against what I'm saying. But I just don't see how these scooters are going to last the rainy season here in Seattle. It rains for straight months.
It's not going to – that's, you know, that's just one of the aspects to think about, and you're right. Like, I mean, you can't just do the simple math of, oh, let's say one scooter generates, you know, $20 a day based on usage, $1 per ride or $2 per ride. But you can't do the math across the entire year. And depending on the location of the city, it could be half a year or it could be three-fourths of the year. And you also can't do that, you know, in terms of hourly, because they're going to be used more or less from, you know, 8 a.m., you know, or 7 a.m. until like 8 p.m. most likely. And, but yeah, I from what I'm reading, it seems like they're a feeder to the, you know, ride sharing war that is, you know, and actually, like, so scooters and bikes are a feeder to the transportation war, which is the, you know, ride sharing. And it just feels like, to me, it's like, this is the epitome of create a company, leverage some other third party manufacturers, create a company and simply drive towards acquisition in 2 years.
Yeah.
But it's like how it, you know, the market sets the price for sure from an acquisition and value standpoint, but their valuation, there's no fucking way it's $1 billion or $2 billion. No way. And yeah, it just rubs me so hard, man.
Well, I understand, because I mean, it's tough to raise money. And when that much money, hundreds of millions of dollars, gets thrown at these scooters, you know, just for California, more or less, with Uber, it made sense. Lyft made sense. You were going to be able to scale that across the world.
Well, and the craziest thing is, like I said, you know, Bird, they're not building those from scratch. So they have costs outlay to go get those scooters. They put their brand on it, and then I don't know the unit economics here, but I just guarantee that it is an acquisition attempt for sure, because I don't see how you don't – I would have a hard time seeing in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years when this company becomes operationally, you know, sound and, you know, profitable, or at least cash flow, when basically, you know, they have to buy outright those scooters and from the manufacturers and then try to make it up on a dollar a ride or whatever. It's like, this is almost worse than like when Instagram and all these social sharing, photo sharing apps came out and everyone thought that they were $500 million valuation. And, you know, I think we've seen the value of, you know, some of these players, but I just have trouble with this one.
Yeah. I don't blame you on that. If you do the math, it's 15 cents per minute. So to make $1, you need to ride for 6 minutes, right? So to make $1 billion, that means they need 60 billion minutes of ride time. 60 billion minutes. That's a lot of minutes to be limited by the locations that you can ride. I just don't think they're ever going to get that number. Just doesn't sound obtainable.
No.
I enjoyed myself on the scooter for the 20-30 minutes that I rode on it, but I just don't see them getting that many rides and this ever making their money back. It is just wild. But all right, so we've talked a lot about Bird scooters, so let's go on to some other problems that the community at Founders Live have been talking about. And the next question is from, in Portland, Oregon, Kevin Lewis, who I was looking at his profile. Maybe you know a little bit more about him than I do. I know it says CTO of eChemion Inc., R&D engineering manager.
Kevin actually pitched at Founders Live in Portland about 3 months ago. He had a great pitch. Kevin's a smart dude, man. He's a great guy.
And so what's the question that he's asking this week?
Yeah, so Kevin posts, basically the question is about, you know, talent recruiting, and, you know, he pretty much says, he kind of goes a little longer here, but the crux of it is, how do we make sure we find the right fit, the right talent fit for growing from 3 to 4 people? What about then growing from 4 to 10? How do we hire the right first time so we don't waste time, any time evaluating and replacing people? And it really is just, you know, when you're an early stage company, you know, I've posed this question a few times, and actually, like, I led a panel 2 days ago on some of this topic of, you know, finding talent. First of all, where do you find that talent? You know, how are you as a founder, and maybe you have a co-founder and a couple of people, but you're really starting to grow and you need to bring on equal, if not better, talent to grow your company. You know, what Kevin's saying is, how do we do that? How do we do that the right way? How much time of every week should I be dedicating to finding the next hire? And how much am I going to let that time take away from fundraising, production, and problem solving? And unfortunately, there's no simple answer to that one, Kevin. But I think my quick take on this is, you should always be recruiting. And that means the way that you go about being in the community and like running your business is a part of your life, is always about connecting with people, you know, just knowing a ton of people in your community, always thinking, well, I'm always going to be attracting talent, so I need to approach it that way. But I think specifically, you just got to create those job descriptions. You got to identify the 3 to 5 people you want to sit down and talk to, and you just got to make the time for it. But I don't know, Connor, you've joined some teams in the last handful of years. What do you think?
Yeah, and I have a recruiting background, so I understand how A, time consuming it is, but then just how difficult it is to find the right person. In an interview environment, you don't really get to know anyone at an intimate level to understand. There's hard skills and there's soft skills. So they might be able to do the work, but do you want to spend 40 to 80 hours with this person every week? That is actually what I think is a more important factor. Hard skills are obviously very important, but I think the soft skills are what go untalked about for most of recruiting, because you can usually get the hard work done if you enjoy working together, right? And solving problems and getting there to just find the solutions. And so finding those qualities that with people who have empathy and drive and hard work and dedication, those are really hard things to tell. But I think those are some of the most important factors that you want to look for that match your company culturally. And especially within the engineering field, that's hard to find, that's hard to test for. And I think it goes undervalued sometimes. But a couple other things that I've noticed with the companies that I've worked for, firing needs to happen. And I hate to put this, bluntly, but as the leader, CEO, CTO, if you're in the leadership position where you're doing the hiring, and this is what I said to on Kevin's post, is I just don't think we're talking enough about firing. We need to, and I know it's not the PC version and the right thing, but it's more important to trim the fat and get the people who aren't working out of there than to let them waste more time. Mm-hmm. Because if you're really struggling, they're not the right person, you have to focus on getting someone new. And I've had plenty of experience with just being on a team and, you know, it's not my decision to, I can't fire the person, but it's just like, we just got to get this person out of here. That'll be the best for the organization.
Yeah.
And so figuring out, I mean, especially because I assume he's in engineering, doing contract to hire is probably preferred, because you just need to give it 3 months to really understand, is this the right person, and dedication. But lastly, I want to echo exactly what you said. From the day before you start your company, you should always be thinking about recruiting people and recruiting within your network and building your network. And so my company's still very new, but I want the company to drive leads, not only for customers, but for people working for me now. So now, right, like I'm trying to work on some video projects, and I'm meeting with people who are photographers and videographers, and I'm trying to get them to come to me and say, hey, like, I want to come do work for you. And so I think this whole content marketing concept, especially if you're a leader, if you're a thought leader, putting your content out there and your thoughts out there can convince people that, hey, I want to go work for Nick, right? Nick is influential. He knows what he's talking about, and he's someone that I could learn from. And I want to approach Nick because I want to at least get, you know, in his pocket one day so I can help him out and be a part of his team. I think that's super important for a leader. And it's just being ahead of the curve. So knowing these things before the process of hiring even comes up.
So, yeah, totally true, man. And hopefully we answer your question, Kevin. If not, probably created more questions, but you know, hopefully that was a little bit of context.
I know that other people jump in there.
Yeah, me too. Question. You know, just lastly, I do need to get going. We're getting a little over time, but hey, man, it's the weirdest bittersweet every 4 years summer that I've had in a while. You're probably there too, Connor. And, you know, yesterday the World Cup kicked off. Dude, it's like, I look at the schedule and I'm just like, ugh. I can't tell you that there's a lot of better sports games to watch than like US during the World Cup. You can go to a bar and there's packed and everyone's like in it. And so this year that ain't going to happen. I'm still going to try to go to some, you know, at least go watch some games and get around the crowd. But what are your thoughts real quick? Let's tie it up pretty quick. But what are your thoughts as World Cup starting? And it's a good time, but it's still bittersweet.
Yeah, and it's not going to have the same energy as it did 4 years ago when the U.S. is in it and people are talking about it every single day, and there's this buzz going around it, which is unfortunate. I bet the bars and the restaurants around the country are really going to reel from that. They're just not going to get the traffic that they could have had. But I'm a diehard soccer fan. Like, this whole month is dedicated to watching soccer. Like, I was up this morning. My alarm went off at 5 a.m. and I went and I just, like, laid on my couch and I, like, pretty much was asleep for the whole game. But my intention was, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to go in my living room, turn my TV on, and at least have the noise going. And then when Uruguay scored today in the 90th minute, like, it woke me up. And I was like, oh, my gosh, no way. So I'm obsessed. And I've pretty much scheduled my whole month around these games. It's in my calendar. Like, I have a meeting today at 11 because Spain versus Portugal is at 10 o'clock. And I was like, all right, like, I can at least watch the first half, and then I'll go to this meeting. And so my pick, I really want Belgium to win. They've got such a talented team. They're not, like, a favorite, but they're super stacked. And so that's who I think is going to win. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be – I'll be honest and say I'm not going to be watching as closely as I would if U.S. was in, but I'm also a diehard soccer fan, at least at heart, and I will try to catch games as best I can, and, you know, maybe we should coordinate watching a few when we can.
Yes. And so that concludes the show. This is episode 15 of the Catching Up Podcast with Connor and Nick. Nick, you got any final words where people can find you on the internet?
Find me on founderslive.com. Find me on LinkedIn. Find me on Twitter. Would love to chat.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Nick. Once again, thank you very much for everyone for watching the show. If you have any questions on Twitter or Founders Live, shoot it to us there. And we look forward to seeing you at episode 16 of the Catching Up Podcast next week. Nick, I will see you this evening.
Yep. Sounds good.
See you later.
Peace. You know, man.